Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It is 12:20. Well, let's start that over. Start the tape. 12:10 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm just a little off kilter because Bennett is dancing in the control room. It's Friday. Andrea Haynes comes in today, and we usually talk about tech stories, but no, she's just Game of Thrones crazy.
I'm making you say Targaryen, and I'm throwing you off.
So I can't get focused in that. So you wrote a piece in the Trib not too long ago where, because we've talked about Game of Thrones, and you never watched it.
I did not. I didn't think I was interested in fantasy, so, you know, just as a genre. So right. I just wasn't, you know, and the violence turned me off. Well, I just was not at all thinking that this was something I needed to watch.
We talked to Ian Schur from CNET yesterday, an editor there, and they have a reporter who was watching, I think, 72 hours of Marvel movies back to back to back.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so you're kind of the same thing. Game of Thrones last season, it's out. And so, what, a few weeks ago, you started from the beginning.
Yep, I started from the beginning. I can't remember exactly when it was. It was maybe 5 weeks ago now because I've been watching the season live, but I did cram it all in, binge watch it really fast, and I'm completely obsessed with it now, like most of humanity.
You're kind of a nut about it now.
I'm kind of a nut about it. I really am. I just think it's such a great story. It's like I hide my eyes when the violence happens, so I haven't watched a lot of that, but just the richness and detail of this multi-generational.
And you've watched this season's episodes
twice. I've rewatched the two so far this season. I think they're great. I know you think they're a little slow, but I've loved them.
Yeah, I get cold. I want them out of the north.
Yeah, they're in the north. It is very foreboding, but it's,
I just love watching you because you're so enthusiastic. So you know all the names, Targaryen.
I definitely know most of the
Nigerian
names.
Nigerian's not one of them, is he?
Are you thinking of Jon Nigerian?
Yeah, maybe that's not it, yeah.
But yeah, that's actually pretty close.
Okay.
You've got your Targaryens, your Lannisters, of course your Starks. That one everyone can remember.
Who's going to end up on the throne?
I have literally no idea if there even still will be a throne.
Yeah.
So I do not know.
Okay, well, so there's our
Sansa,
little diversion.
Sansa, though, is the best character, in my opinion.
Listen to her, you guys. Really, she knew nothing 8 weeks ago.
And now I'm a nut.
Well, we'll check in next week. I can't wait for our update. Okay, so let's go to the freezer section. We have talked about this in past episodes where there's new technology, marketing technology, where they put cameras in. It's basically freezer sections, right? And so they look at you and they decide if you're likely to buy frozen sherbet or Rocky Road ice cream, and then they target ads for you that way, right?
Yes. And so I think we know we've been watched in stores, right? Back in the day, we were watched by human beings who were studying our habits. These particular cameras are being used to guess your age,
right,
your gender, or even your mood. And so that is raising some interest because should a store be really chronicling our moods?
So really, they will do that. They can look at what you're... So if you have the RBF, is that the acronym? So then they would always be offering you sugar to pep you up?
So that could be wrong, right? I feel like I have RBF, so they might be like, Andrea's depressed, we must sell her something to make her feel better. And but I might just be thinking about how stressed I am about being on Steve's show today. Maybe I'm not actually depressed.
Because it's a very stressful situation.
It sure is.
But so really, they said they could read the mood of your face and perhaps try to sell you antidepressants?
Yeah, on a more serious note, right? That's what they're using it for, really, is to try to sell you something that's relevant to your current situation. So maybe that's that you're depressed. It could be that you're wearing eyeglasses or that you have a beard. Like, those were a couple examples they gave of things where that might cause them to target you to buy certain things.
They might read eye motion on the counter, on the cabinet there, in the case, and see that people routinely look at the milk chocolate drumsticks but never buy them. So like, well, they're close but they're not buying them, and so it could pay for them to put those displays at the checkout counter for impulse buys.
Exactly.
That's
looking
sort of
at
stuff.
What people are like, oh, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. So it's really gauging a lot more than just, you know, basic demographics. It's kind of looking at your behavior in kind of a different way.
And all of this is stuff I'm doing in front of everyone else. right?
That's true. That's true. It's just when it's, you know, I guess taped slash chronicled, you know, you start to worry about it a little bit. And Kroger is testing this out, and so is Walgreens. And Walgreens is saying so far that they don't have the iris scans and some of those things activated, but they are one of the companies that is testing this.
Right. So Walgreens said their above the door handle is a camera that can try to guess your age, track the irises, see what you're looking for. Walgreens said those functions are off for now. They said the cameras are currently being used to sense when someone is in front of the cooler and count the number of shoppers passing by. Oh, quit it. That's not true. I mean, so listen to this again. So they have this technology, and they said that right now it's there to count the number of shoppers who walk by the case.
You can't imagine maybe, that it would be worthwhile to do that for very long. I mean, maybe they're doing that to see if the cameras are working or how they're going to use the data, but that would not be the end use of this technology, because that's just too basic.
Clearly,
right?
They're moving toward using it a little further.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I feel terribly about that. I mean, I
you love to be surveilled. I think we've kind of established that over the weeks.
I know, and it really bothers you. So, well, if you surveil me, and we've talked more about McDonald's on this show in the past 10 days or so, but if you surveil me at McDonald's, you'll see that I only buy the double cheeseburger meal. I don't know why. I just never branch out.
Interesting.
And so they had a story recently about, well, a couple. First of all, they were going to pare down their overnight menu to make it a little easier for fast service through the drive-thru. And then they announced they're getting rid of their signature sandwiches. Same sort of thing. I think it takes too long. But then there's the story that is in the Chicago Tribune about how they're going to bring in some of the food that they serve in McDonald's around the world, which it sounds pretty cool, but it's counterintuitive. Why are they streamlining their menu in one front and yet bringing in deep fried brie on another?
Yeah, it's hard to tell regarding the strategy, like how widely they'll do this or what purpose they'll use it for, where or how widely it might be available. But people are always fascinated with these foreign twists. Yeah. On McDonald's products, which, you know, has historically been an American company, which is known for one thing, and that's how homogenous its product offerings are. You get always the same thing. You get your American cheese, right? And that's the end of it. So there's always a fascination with these sort of spins on it from other countries, and there's apparently a thought that that could be a way to raise interest.
I mean, maybe like the McRib sandwich, they'd bring something in to sort of create. So there's a sandwich from Spain, the Grand Extreme, a bacon burger there.
I love that name.
The Grand Extreme. Cheesy bacon fries from Australia, I would line up for that.
Yeah, and you wonder if, like, would it be, like, more as a novelty item, or would they be targeting communities maybe where they do have populations that might be interested in those items? It's unclear yet what they'll be using it for.
Mixed spaghetti from the Philippines, I don't think I would wait for that.
Yeah, Jollibee, which is this Filipino chain, which has recently come to the Chicago area, there's one in Skokie, like, that's been popular, you know, so it's
Do they serve spaghetti?
They do.
Really? No kidding.
Yep.
Okay, we'll have to meet there sometime for dinner. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Steve.
What are you going to be doing Sunday?
Watching Game of Thrones right after celebrating Greek Easter. So it's a busy weekend.
Have a happy Easter.
Thank you.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. We're heading into the weekend, and Sunday's going to be nice. Saturday, we're going to just hibernate maybe, or drive around in our car and not get outside. Ford stock today is up better than 9%. They had better than expected first quarter earnings, and they reported that on yesterday. So that's the good news, but it's not all good news for Ford. To talk about what's going on there right now on a phone line is Dale Buss, a contributor at Forbes. He writes for the Wall Street Journal, Chief Executive Magazine as well. He's been on the program here a couple of times. Dale, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so what's up with Ford and their gas mileage story? Like, they're under federal investigation, right?
They disclosed here in the wake of their earnings report that the Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation into how they certify their vehicles to meet U.S. emission standards. And of course, if this sounds familiar, it's because it is. A handful of companies have been dealing with this over the last couple of years. I mean, in general, emission standards, mileage certification, that sort of thing. Hyundai has gone through it. Obviously, there was the huge thing that debilitated Volkswagen with their cheating on diesel emission standards. Fiat Chrysler just paid an $800 million fine on some emissions-related stuff. But it seems as though Ford is not facing quite as stiff a problem here. They say that there are no defeat devices involved in this investigation.
Well, and so
meaning
that's,
cheating.
This comes out of, I think there was a whistleblower in September, right?
Yeah, there was an internal whistleblower, and they signaled this, I think, in February,
right,
that it kind of something might be coming out about this.
Dale, it reminds me of an NCAA investigation in a way. Like, Ford maybe knows they're about to be busted, so they come out, they admit it, and then now we're learning about the federal investigation.
Yeah, exactly. And Ford, as I said, has admitted it could be material they don't know yet. You know, I suspect, I mean, for instance, who remembers that Fiat Chrysler was hit with an $800 million
right.
fine recently? Meanwhile, they're selling all the Jeeps and Rams they want. Not sure if this will be a big deal for Ford or not.
But so, well, and the day of trading today certainly indicates it probably won't be. But and it's different from Volkswagen, right? As far as we know, Volkswagen was trying to cheat the system. And we don't know that Ford was trying to cheat the system, right?
Right. What Ford has said strongly, and you know, you would hope that they would not do this if it weren't true, but who knows, is that there were no defeat in devices involved. In other words, in the Volkswagen thing, there was this conspiracy to engineer test results so that they looked good while testing, but when the diesel engines actually emitted things into the atmosphere, was a whole different story, and that went to the bottom of the company, cost them many billions of dollars in fines, cost CEOs their jobs, some jail terms. I don't think that's what's in the offing here for Ford. This is a speed bump, probably at worst, and probably not that significant a one.
With Fiat Chrysler, were they intentionally gaming the system as well?
It looks like they were, you know, they never kind of agreed to criminal culpability, but they agreed to pay $800 million to resolve claims that the Justice Department had and that the state of California had that they used illegal software on some of their pickup trucks. So they just did not acknowledge wrongdoing in that case. They paid the money.
Yeah, well, you know, if you can do that and not admit it, fine. But so how does all of this play with the Trump administration's easing of emission standards or... does it at all? Is there not that there's a connection,
well,
but are they, you know, are they trying to get around something that's not going to exist in a year?
No, the Trump administration has done mainly is try to ease up on mileage requirements. In other words, fuel economy requirements. And in fact, part of what's going on here is the Trump administration is trying to send a message to automakers that, yeah, we may want to help you with mileage requirements so that, you know, you're not trying to push electric vehicles on consumers who aren't ready for them. For example, but you know, we're not fooling around when it comes to emissions requirements. We're going to continue strong enforcement actions that were begun under the Obama administration. So pollution and fuel economy standards, you know, a little bit different approach.
I'm glad you clarified that. Right. So we're talking about two different things. So mileage is what they're easing. Emissions, they're still being pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, Trump wants to make it easier overall, but his emphasis has been on this corporate average fuel economy number and making it more realistic for the automakers to reach, and that has to do with fuel economy per se.
While we're talking Ford, you know, they have an assembly plant on the south side, a stamping plant in the south suburbs. My dad worked at the stamping plant for 30 years down there.
I've been there.
I just don't understand the auto purchasing sort of public. We just keep buying bigger and bigger and bigger, and Ford is sort of doubling down right in their giant expedition.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, that's what we want, right? They're trying to meet market demand.
But why do we want, I mean, why? I know that the fuel efficiency in those bigger vehicles is getting better, but I just don't understand how we can be environmentally concerned on one end and then just buy the biggest cars we can on the other.
Well, cognitive dissonance, right? I mean, you know, people will say a lot of things, but their money talks, and while people, for instance, say they're certainly in favor of having electric vehicle options, EVs still remain a very, very tiny piece of the market as their prices come down. And the fact is gasoline prices have been pretty much quiescent for the last decade since they reached, you know, $4 a gallon a decade ago. And so if people can afford to get more capability, the economy's good, joblessness is down, they're going to do that. And so you've got a strong push among businesses, for example, to buy pickup trucks. And then when it comes to SUVs getting ever larger, including you mentioned the new Ford Expedition, a new version of a Lincoln Navigator, that's in large part a function of the coming of age of millennials, not only forming households, but now finally having kids and sometimes bunches of them. And, you know, they're making demands for bigger vehicles. And so you've got not only the traditional SUV makers, but companies like Subaru and Volkswagen coming out with their biggest ever three-row SUVs to try and meet this demand.
Right. And so while I'm on my soapbox or high horse or whatever you want, I should admit that in my household, we have two crossover vehicles. So, you know, I'm part of the, I guess, the problem I'm talking about.
Well, and it's not necessarily, you know, a problem, at least for the auto companies, because they can make more money off a same-size crossover vehicle versus a sedan of the same configuration. And so it's helping keep these companies vital, keeping, you know, U.S. manufacturing alive. And they're finding that people just don't want sedans anymore. They do want crossovers, even if they're small. They want that extra height, the extra cargo area, and flexibility.
Dale Buss writes about cars for Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and others. Dale, love talking to you. Thanks very much for taking the time out today.
All right. All right.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, on a phone line now is Ed Provost, who is the former president and COO of the CBOE, now a partner at Provost Consulting Group. Ed, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Steve.
All the talk is about IPOs, right? Uber is setting a price today. We're reading about Slack and their first quarter. How important is this to just the average investor? Should we be involved in this? Should we be watching it? Or is it just sort of like watching a daytime drama that we shouldn't give too much credence to?
Well, it really has turned out to be a bit of a daytime drama with the price action that we've seen in some of the recent IPOs like Lyft. But it's an incredibly important part of the financial apparatus that organizations like Lyft and Uber and others can go to the markets and raise capital to expand their businesses. From an individual investor standpoint, I don't think it's so critical that individual investors participate directly in the IPO. If you have a belief in the company, there's plenty of opportunity to participate in buying that stock post-IPO. Unfortunately for them, sometimes at lower prices than the IPO price. So, again, I have been of the mind to advise people to stand on the sidelines and really, if you like the company, participate after the IPO process has been completed.
Right. So because what's going to happen in the initial days there's going to be great fluctuation, right? And I think you just alluded to the fact that generally after a few weeks, if you can buy the stock, it tends to be lower than at the initial offering. Am I correct in that?
Well, there's no question that happens as often as it goes directly up. There are times when the enthusiasm of the initial IPO process wanes, the stock drops a bit. There are opportunities to get in at lower prices. So again, while there are examples where the stock continues to go up, there are just as many examples where the stock comes down. And hey, if you end up buying the stock at a little bit higher than the IPO price, if you believe in the company, it's not such a bad deal.
So who is it who's jumping in on these IPO days?
Well, initially, it's mostly institutional investors. In fact, the allocation process for IPO shares is typically aligned to take care of some of the larger, more important institutional clients. Retail clients do participate to some degree, but it's mostly institutional. Retail typically comes in the post-IPO period.
Okay, Ed, let's go back to my heady investor days of the mid-90s. Actually, I never had any heady investor days, but I had a brother-in-law who was, and that seems to me like in the mid-90s were, that's when I first started hearing about IPOs, and maybe it was because of the tech world or whatever, but you know, he had software, you could get different sort of pieces of software where you could buy into these smaller initial public offerings and then flip the stock pretty quickly and make money, right? Do you remember, does that still exist? Or is that kind of a bygone era?
I think that's a bygone era. Typically, it has to do with your relationship with the broker that you use and whether that broker gets an allocation of stock. So, again, my view is not so important to be actually involved in the purchase of stock right off the IPO, but rather take a look at the stock action following the IPO and decide whether or not that's a good long-term investment for you.
I see you're getting a big award from Econ Illinois a little bit later. I think it's in May. And that's a group that works on expanding financial literacy for those of us in Illinois. So congratulations on that.
Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate that. Econ Illinois is a fabulous organization. It's a 501c3 that's operated in the state of Illinois for over 60 years, if you can believe it. And their objective is to support elementary and high school teachers in providing economic and financial education for young people who, I think in this day and age, need it more than ever, as we all find ourselves being the president and CEO of our personal lives. And today, people are much more having to manage their own financial affairs as the days of pension plans may be waning, and managing your 401k and your IRA investments requires some basic knowledge. And that's the objective of Econ Illinois, when these young kids come out of high school, that they have some basic training in financial literacy.
All right, we'll go to school in a minute, but you brought up something that's central to me, because, you know, I am probably of the age, you know, where the 401k is going to be the big investment for, or the big retirement contributor for me. I've been working long enough to have a little bit of a pension as well, but, you know, we all have so much more control over our future than we used to, but the problem is we have so much control over it. No one else is looking out for us, and I just feel like we're headed toward troubled times, that people are going to be retiring, and because they haven't paid attention to their 401k, there's disaster looming.
Yeah, there's no question, Steve. You hit right on it. What we have read so much and hear so much is how much money people have set aside at some later stage in life. A 50-year-old maybe on average has $25,000, $35,000 saved for savings, in some cases nothing. And you hear those numbers and you say to yourself, how in the world are they going to be able to live a reasonably comfortable life once they retired? And unfortunately, when you get to that age, it's a little bit too late to get started. It's absolutely critical that the day a young person starts a job, they take advantage of every opportunity to save for the retirement, most often on a tax-deferred or tax-advantage way. And then having to manage those invested dollars, very much today, savers and investors have to make decisions whether they invest in equities or bonds. And if it's in equities, is it in individual stocks or mutual funds? So all of that's falling to the individual.
And what's going to happen to those individuals who are now 50, 55, who are way behind when it comes to retirement? I mean, are they going to work forever? Is there going to be some new social program to bail them out? Because I just feel like there are going to be millions of us who just won't be able to get by.
Well, I think the answer to your question is yes, yes, yes. Yeah. On all of those points, they're going to be living a less than glamorous lifestyle, may certainly less than they might have hoped. There will be safety net programs that will unfortunately have to be provided for those who cannot provide for themselves. It's going to be really difficult. I think I can see Social Security being modified in the future to means test out some people who have done a much more diligent job and may not be as reliant on Social Security, so that some extra funds might be available for people who are less able to provide for themselves. So it's going to be really a combination of all those things.
It can be avoided by investing early and being aware of your future, and I guess that's what Econ Illinois does. So tell me a little bit about the value of students learning that, not just learning this early on, but acting on it early on.
Well, there's no question, Steve, that the things that Econ Illinois focuses on is some of the very basic issues about needing to know that a portion of your paycheck has to be saved. You learn to live off of 80% of the money you earn, not 100% of the money you earn. That when you borrow money, you pay interest. When you save money, you earn interest, and interest compounds. As the student advances into high school, Econ Illinois promotes a stock market game, which allows them to understand how you analyze a company, how a company makes profits, how that those profits turn into a stock price, and how stocks become an investment vehicle for long-term growth. So again, it starts with the very basics and gets a little more sophisticated. But the objective is when someone leaves high school, they understand the basic issues around financial literacy and the concept of saving and investing.
Ed Provost is the former president of the CBOE and now a partner at Provost Consulting Group. And the event coming up at Econ Illinois is May 15th. You can find information at econillinois.org. Ed, it was great to talk to you. Thanks very much for your help today.
Great to be with you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. We hear about it all the time in the business world, where there's a need for more diversity. And 1871 is continuing their grassroots movement to encourage women to get into the business world. And next week, there's an all-day event to help that. The Women Tech Founders Conference is on Thursday, May 2nd, and that goes all day from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. There will be plenty to do at the conference, but some of the speakers that will be there are from the YWCA Chicago, Chicago Blockchain Center, NASA, and more. You know what you got to do? Just register at 1871.com. And Mayor Emanuel knows what he's got to do before he leaves office. He's got to help end this Chicago Symphony Orchestra strike. The two sides of the strike have taken up Rahm on his offer to meet at his office to help mediate the disagreements and hopefully come to a conclusion. They met on Wednesday, but the strike has now dipped into the second month. The mayor decided to step in because he says that the CSO is the crown jewel of Chicago's cultural scene. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and Steve Alexander has stopped talking to me, so I've got that going for me. On the phone line now is front row Phyllis. Phyllis, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
All right, so nice night tonight. Tomorrow looks not so much, so I'm sure we're going to be looking for things to do over the weekend. Yeah, probably not the American Girl show for me, but I would imagine it's popular with a lot of people.
It is popular. Well, I think if your daughter was a little younger, you'd probably be definitely entertaining it, right?
Probably.
Yeah. You know what? This is actually, it's an original. It's 90 minutes. It's over at the Broadway Playhouse. It runs April 30th through May 12th. And it just celebrates the power of girls and strength and friendships. And then what they've done is they've taken it to a storyline that takes place at Camp American Girl. And it really, you know, just teaches young girls about, you know, overcoming their fears and obstacles while they're having the time of their lives at the summer camp. So it's really going to be a lot of fun, to tell you the truth.
And that's here now, or it's coming in next week, right? And then runs through May 12th?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, April 30th through May 12th. Yep.
So I'm in the podcast called The Mincing Rascals with John Williams and Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman sometimes as well. We weren't recording it. This is really weird, but yesterday when we started to record, we were checking our mics and stuff. I don't know how it happened. I think I started it, but we ended up singing a song from West Side Story, which makes
really?
No sense whatsoever. and then it's kind of frightening, actually. But then I'm looking at your list, and coming up next week, West Side Story's coming to the Lyric Opera.
Oh, my gosh. You know, the Lyric always does, at the end of the season, always does a huge, huge, incredible production. Last year was Cinderella. This year it's West Side Story. And everybody's waited. So it opens on May 3rd, runs through June 2nd, and it is just a musical masterpiece filled with incredible, explosive dancing sequences, and then the great story. So, you know, the two rival gangs. So you got everything from bold and sexy and iconic dances, and it's just incredible music. So you definitely want to check it out.
I love how the Lyric has been doing this. I don't know, maybe it's been 10 years, maybe it's been more, where they will wrap up their season with a spring show, which is more of a popular music. I think they've done Oklahoma, they've done others, and so that's the case here with West Side Story.
Exactly, yep.
All right, so what's your favorite song from West Side Story?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. No, I want to hear what you guys were singing on the podcast.
I think it was like the I Want to Live in America song, because for some reason I'm not going to go into it, but yeah. I had a great album in the 80s that Dave Brubeck did the songs of West Side Story, which I still have on album somewhere. Okay, Ben Platt.
Right.
Ben Platt is a guy who I think I should know about.
Oh, yeah, you definitely know about him. If you saw Dear Evan Hansen, he was the actual first actor that performed it in New York. And he's also been in Pitch Perfect, and he's the Tony Award-winning actor. Well, the great thing is that he actually just released his first of two singles that came out in February on his new debut solo album that's coming out just in a few months. So this is a chance to see him in a different realm, up close and personal, singing his songs.
And this is
at the Chicago
Theater on May 3rd. You know, are there still tickets available?
There are still tickets available,
okay.
Yep.
And Temptations and Four Tops, wow.
Is that exciting or what? That's also at the Chicago Theater on May 5th. And all I got to say is it's going to be a night filled with just pure solid gold. Two Motown legends, one night hitting one stage. It's going to be great.
And so we've got that going for us. And one more. I really like the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. It's a nice little space. This is another kids show, though. Junie B. Jones, my kids used to read those books. And so it looks
kids
show. That comes in next week, too?
That does. On April 30th, there's two performances, at 10 o'clock and then noon. It's, of course, a musical adventure based on the books. And she's actually now in school. So she's going to teach the kids and tell them all about what's going on in school, from bus rules to carpools.
So Junie B. Jones goes to school? I mean, is a teacher?
Yeah.
No, she's not a teacher.
Yeah. No, she's a student.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she's one of the students. Remember, she was so little. Now she's getting a little bigger.
Yeah, and I don't think the best education system in the world could ever get her in a classroom as a teacher, though. I just don't have that much
faith. I don't think so.
All right, people, read more about this at where? FrontRowPhyllis.com?
You got it.
All right, have a great weekend, Phyllis. Nice to talk with you.
You too.